Joining us on the podcast today, we have Lee Caswell from VMware. Lee, it's been a little while. How have you been?
Yeah, really good. Thanks, Brian. It's unusual times, and at the same time, we've got a tremendous amount of things going on. So
I know you as the vSAN guy, but I don't even know what your real title is over there. What do you have a real title? What's your role there?
Well, it's a VP of marketing role.
Sounds fancier than vSAN guy.
It's actually, you know, it started off with vSAN, then expanded into VCF. So as we basically put the full stack together, and now most recently, we've actually brought vSphere in. So now I've got kind of purview over the, you know, the full stack. We've left the NSX business and the management businesses as separate entities because they're really, I mean, it's large businesses on their own merit. And we've also organized all of our cloud assets into a single new business unit called Cloud Services. So that takes like VMC, for example, all of our partner managed cloud solutions, for example, like with Azure VMware Solutions, VMware Cloud Solutions, Google Cloud Solutions, and our VCPP partners. All that's now organized together, which I think is really smart, right? So you got all the cloud pieces together. We have all the pieces of the VMware Cloud Foundation now, you know, fully integrated, and the full integration of vSphere now, as we'll talk about in a little bit, right, for Kubernetes, now integrated into this as well. So that's my role, and it's about, you know, product marketing, technical marketing, all of our partner engagements. You know, super fun view on the industry for sure.
All right, so the vSAN guy. You mentioned Cloud Foundry, and I want to talk about VCF a little bit because I think that's one of your, it's a really interesting product, but I think sometimes smaller orgs think it's too big for them or too much. How do you think about what is VCF? How do you talk to your customers about it? And what's the sort of delineation between when that sort of infrastructure makes sense?
Yeah, customers are really, I think, struggling to just assimilate the amount of raw innovation that's coming up, right? So if you looked at all the versions, for example, like we got the new vSAN version, right? There's a new vRealize capabilities, NSX, right, for our virtual network capabilities. And then just the idea that I've got to, you know, configure that, put it together, and lifecycle management over time, it can be a lot, right? And so we're really treating VCF almost like Microsoft Office, if you think about it for a minute, right? You may not know, like in the latest version, right, what the latest PowerPoint feature is, for example, right? But you upgrade the full stack each time, right? You get basically a discount across the products because you get them all pulled together, and you have that, you know, single click upgrade across all of the elements. So that's number one. So we're helping customers go and deploy more easily, so they have, you know, they can stop looking down at the infrastructure and start looking up at the apps. That's what we're finding is the most important thing right now, is that customers are trying to respond quickly, right, to the pace at which applications are deploying. So that's number one. What's also interesting then is the upgrade cycle for customers stops looking like an individual feature, like by individual component element. And you may want individual, like we introduced files, for example, right, in vSAN, and that's good, right? But instead of upgrading just on that one feature, what you probably want to think about is, hey, how do I think about like security and taking security upgrades across the entire stack? And that becomes then the seminal moment of like, I'm going to update all of the components at one time and get that with intrinsic security built in and extensible into the hybrid cloud. I mean, now all of a sudden I can stop worrying about the individual components and start thinking about the operational model.
So do you see it as a transition from, how are people getting to VCF? Is it a transition from legacy infrastructure and it's part of a new decision? Are people starting with HCI and saying, okay, well, I kind of like some of the operational benefits here of what VCF can provide and step into it? Or what's the adoption path look like?
You know, I initially thought that vSAN, right, would be the kind of the launching pad. You know, we're adding still 100 customers a week on vSAN, right? It's on a torrid pace of adoption, and we're just, you know, continuing to take share and, you know, expand our footprint there. But what is surprising, let me give you a couple of numbers, right? So out of, like in our VCF sales, right? Over 80% of VCF customers are net new to VCN. Think about that for a minute, right? So what happens is, as people basically use VCF as that seminal moment, as I mentioned, right? Here's the moment where I can go and flip to an all software-defined data center. That all of a sudden now brings customers in. And so we're certainly finding that customers can find an area to get started, whether it's a VDI use case or a database use case, right? Or a remote office. Find an area where you can take even down to like four nodes today, where you can get started, right? With and we've done some really interesting work with Dell Technologies, for example, on how to do that with VxRail, with VCF. You get started on that, you get familiar with this operating model, and it becomes a little bit like the way that vSphere got adopted. Right? You may remember back in the early days of vSphere, right? We were virtualizing things called like Craplications. You remember that, right? Mm-hmm. All the stuff you didn't care about, right? It was DHCP servers, file print servers. And then what happened is customers got familiar with the operating model. They're like, well, why couldn't I run a database on here? And you'd be like, well, you know, there's a virtualization. There's always these packs of basically running a virtualization layer. And you're like, yeah, but like with the advances in silicon, I can get this raw performance right now where it's actually, I could run almost everything and I'd have to justify why things wouldn't be in this environment. And that's what we're seeing is happening on VCF.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. You mentioned some of the growth both in VCF and then your VCN customers at large. And of course, IDC had numbers out just recently. And are you pretty happy with that number one spot and 42.4% market share? Is that good enough yet?
Oh, no.
Not good enough?
Please be not satisfied. So
okay. So tell me about that market share. I mean, you guys have been, let's see, from 1Q19, 41.5 to 42.5 almost a year later. It's a nice incremental move. I mean, you're adding those customers on. So just tell me how that's going and what you think about those numbers.
Yeah. So what's happened, right, is, you know, HCI started outside of the data center. And that was, you know, an area which was kind of hard fought with some earlier players there. But what we found is as HCI is now a mainstream enterprise strategic infrastructure component, right? And promoted heavily by our partners, including Dell, but also with HPE, for example, who announced integrated ready nodes recently, Fujitsu, Lenovo. You're seeing that now what's happened is HCI has landed in the data center proper. And it's not replacing storage in the sense that people are throwing away their storage. They're actually managing both. And so what you're seeing is these are very large markets, right? The mid-range storage market and the HCI market. And so what's interesting is where you used to have compute and storage separate, now what you have is HCI for transactional workloads and storage. And that becomes the new model, right? Of saying, hey, I'm going to manage both. And, you know, VMware is the only company that allows you to bridge with a common operating model control plane across storage using vVols and HCI using vSAN. Right. And so you've got this really interesting world. And that actually differentiates us from companies like AWS with Outposts or Google Anthos, right? Or Microsoft Azure, right? Because now what you're saying is your on-prem infrastructure extends across storage platforms. So you can basically bring in all your legacy and traditional environments, and that same operational model extends into the public cloud with all our hyperscaler partners. So this is how we're seeing customers, once the penny drops, as they realize that the cloud doesn't have to be a separate operational silo, the storage doesn't have to be a separate operational silo, and now modern applications, if you can bring that all together, all of a sudden you got tremendous leverage, right? With uncertain times, that's a pretty important economic driver.
Yeah, that's an interesting take. You mentioned vVols. How's that going? That was one that was a little slower, I think, to get operationalized by your customers. Is that momentum moving on vVols now?
It is. Yeah. So vVols now, triple digit growth. Listen, vVols had kind of a three lives, you know. There was the initial excitement about, wow, you know, this is cool. VMware thought it was cool. VI admins thought it was pretty cool. Turns out the storage folks weren't that excited about it, right? you know, I know because I was at a storage company at the time. We're like, I don't know, you know, like if that's a good idea. So that was first. Second, like VMware basically kind of dropped back and said, listen, we're going to go focus on getting vSAN established. And so we went to go do that, right? And now what you have is, you know, over 20,000 vSAN customers who are looking for operational leverage, saying, if I could, you know, if I'm managing now vSAN and VxRail and all of my ready nodes, and I'm managing that part of the, you know, my infrastructure from a VM centric viewpoint, like that's a really compelling argument. So that's how we got the operational model established. And so then we came back, right? So we're now at vVols is a, you know, move from 1.0 to we're now at 2.5. We've got major support, including, by the way, the very first array with vVols embedded support just launched called PowerStore from Dell. And so what we're looking at there is, right, listen, that's a major shift in the industry. You know, EMC wasn't a strong advocate in the past, but has leaned in fully, right, to have a vVol-enabled control plane that gives customers leverage. That's a major shift. And you're going to see this just really rocket as we basically look at the new CI model, the new converged infrastructure is HCI plus storage.
Yeah, well, I mean, it makes sense. And we talk a lot, and I know you started, you hit on Kubernetes in the beginning, and we'll come back to that, or maybe not, maybe now is a good spot, is that think about the management of all these workloads, of all these devices, of all these things in the infrastructure, and where does that control plane make sense? And we've seen some vendors start to kind of put up the walls and say, well, we want to have control over that. We want to have control over your Kubernetes environment. Not maybe control isn't the right word, but we want to be the place to go to administer that. And of course, VMware is very much saying, especially with a couple acquisitions around the container space of, hey, we can do that too. Because I think there was some initial threat when, you know, Docker was coming up, and that the very first Kubicons, I remember that there was a lot of sentiment of this could be the end of virtualization. You know, this is the new wave. And for a little while, and for some workloads, it kind of was. But then as that grew up, the data center and the CXO said, let's get some compliance around this. Let's get some controls around this. And containers are cool and all, but you know, we've got to still have professional management around these things. And so, I mean, to VMware's credit, you guys have built that practice in, and rather than saying containers are garbage, you know, that'll never catch on, which would have been one play.
Sure.
Yeah, I think you guys went hard the other way and said, okay, they're coming. How do we embrace and manage that? So, you know, talk to me a little bit about containers and how that's going.
Yeah, it's interesting because let's compare like what's happening on containers versus like OpenStack. Remember OpenStack? So if you went back, we looked at OpenStack and looked and said, you know, there really wasn't any incremental value over what VMware was offering today. And so we're like, listen, you know, customers want to try that, we'll kind of work through the process. But at the end of the day, the enterprise resiliency, the operational model, the installed base that we had, right, really carried the day right on that. We looked at containers in a very different way. The container value is actually quite different and complementary to what the value of virtualization is. Containers are designed around speed of developer applications.
Yeah.
Right, and the ability to do that. So we saw that as like, hey, that's not just a little bit interesting, right? That is all of a sudden, right, what is going to drive customers moving forward. And so it required a shift of, you know, instead of building infrastructure for infrastructure sake, and what we're doing right now is we're making infrastructure respond at the pace of developer. I call this developer ready infrastructure, right? It's like, how fast can you respond to changing applications? And, you know, our data shows that, you know, 74% of applications are going to be container-based, right, by, you know, the mid-2020s even, right?
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see. I mean, at least some of the data we saw, it said that, 95% of new applications are being developed on containers. So we can argue about, like, when it becomes mainstream, but the fact that container development... So we looked at that. And then one other interesting thing I thought was that, you know, developers don't really care about the underlying infrastructure.
Hardly at all, right?
Yeah, they don't really want to know, right? And yet you got the infrastructure folks are saying, like, that's the essence of, like, security, right, and resiliency. And, you know, it's not enough to just move fast. You have to basically get things into production, right, and respond to changing workloads and be able to monitor, right, all those things that infrastructure folks know how to do. And so what we looked at is the most important thing was to basically make our infrastructure developer ready. And if that developer was going to be working on Kubernetes-based, container-based applications, Kubernetes orchestrated container-based applications, mm-hmm. then we needed to re-architect fundamentally how easy it would be to spin up containers, which are created more frequently, destroyed more often, they're portable across the hybrid cloud, but there's no intrinsic security model. There's no intrinsic way to go and basically manage these. So what we then did, we acquired a company called Heptio with two of the Kubernetes founders, as you know, mm-hmm. And went on a mission with vSphere 7 with Tanzu, as we call it, right, our Kubernetes portfolio. And what we did is we basically integrated Kubernetes directly into the hypervisor itself. Now, it's not all native in the kernel, but just like we took a type one hypervisor, remember that? Type one hypervisor, right, was basically consolidating or basically integrating the hypervisor with the OS, the kernel, right, the Linux kernel mm-hmm. basically at the time. That type one approach is exactly what we followed with vSAN, by the way, right? And by the way, in each case, we started unintegrated and then became integrated. So we had something called GSX, if you remember, right? Yep. That became ESX, that was the integration. We had a VSA, if you remember that, right? That ran on mm-hmm. top of, and then we integrated. And similarly, we had non-integrated Kubernetes applications until vSphere 7. And that's now integrated, where we have a private Kubernetes integrated into our pod services. And then on top of that, we have the Tanzu Kubernetes grid. And that is where you have an upstream compatible Kubernetes support for any applications. And so the idea is not that a developer will be our customer directly, but that a developer who comes in and says, good news, like I've built this and I could put it into the public cloud, or I could go and basically make VMware a top tier, state of the art developer deployment vehicle for modern applications. That's makes sense, right? I mean, this is the idea, and we felt this was so important for us to be able to do this, to make sure that that hybrid cloud works, right? All that is to basically make us developer ready.
You know, the two things that always scared me about the container movement were compliance and data protection, data, backup and recovery, that sort of thing. And I know the developers don't care a whole lot about that. And maybe that's just my, getting older guy sort of panicking about things of that nature. But I mean, how many times do we see data breaches or exposing Social Security, whatever it is, it happens over and over again. And as these apps get a little faster, a little more Wild Westy in this container methodologies, that's what I worried a lot about. What do you seeing customers worry about, or what are the, and how do you deal with that and tie that back into what you're doing within vSphere to make sure that we're treating these containers like enterprise data and enterprise applications should be treated?
Yeah, it's precisely the value of having the architectural control point. People that sometimes have argued, well, there's a lock-in aspect to this. And let's be honest, right? There's always a lock-in aspect of whatever technology choices you have. What we've mm-hmm. argued, right, is that the ability to go and tie in the full VMware Cloud Foundation with vSphere means that the architectural control point is the ideal case to look at compliance, at intrinsic security across all the elements. And we can do it in an automated way for customers that they can never do with individual components by themselves. They'll just be overrun, right, trying to do that. And to the extent that intrinsic security model now extends to the cloud. I mean, take NSX, for example, right? The fact that VMs can move across the hybrid cloud, right, whether they're supporting containers or traditional, applications, and carry with them, right, security attributes. It's a little bit like being TSA qualified, right? You can go to the airport of your sure. choice, right? You get to choose the line, pre-checked. Right? Because you've been pre-checked, right? I mean, that's the concept we have, right, which is that assume mobility, right? And assuming that, right, now what you have to have is some sort of security-based policy. And that security model is how we're looking actually at security in general. I mean, NSX is one component, but we have an entire, we acquired Carbon Black, right, as you know. Mm-hmm. And what that really starts looking like is, rather than have bolt-on security pieces around all of the network, compute, storage elements, now what you have is intrinsic security, right, within the architecture, and now that extends out. And so what that gives then is it gives customers the ability to deploy the applications of choice on the cloud of choice, right, where we're running in all of the major clouds. And as I mentioned, right, you know, because we came at this, I did at least, from a storage-centric background, it allows us to extend that back into traditional storage where customers have huge investments today and still get the operational speed and economics of HCI and work them together, right? So that's the element that we're seeing. We're calling this future ready, by the way,
okay,
right? Because different customers are at different stages. Some are like, oh, I'm all in the public cloud, right? Or some are like, well, I'm considering modern applications or Kubernetes-based applications. Wherever you're heading, VMware is going to give you a secure enterprise resilient path with the degrees of freedom you may exercise over time.
Okay. Well, I was listening to you, but you kind of pissed me off talking about pre-check and thinking about not being able to go anywhere. Yeah, I think I flew at the end of February, right before things locked down. And, you know, it's one of those things that I think maybe everyone feels the same way that does all these events and goes to Vegas 12 times a year.
Exactly.
Is that it's really annoying when you're doing it and you're like week three in a row of going to a trade show. And then when it's all arbitrarily sort of taken away from you, then it's like, I kind of miss it a little bit. I've never said I missed Vegas before, but I kind of miss it.
I never thought we'd say that, right? And yet at the same time, you know, and there's the personal aspect of engaging with people, right? That is so important, right? So I agree with you.
Yeah. And well, VMworld's registration, I think, just kicked off, what, this week or last week or something. So you guys have that going on. What are you doing different to prep for that? Because that would be in late August. Normally, you'd be well into the swing of it right now.
Yeah. So we've got a major thing. I mean, we've pushed it off by 1 month effectively, right? So, and what's interesting is you have a lot more flexibility, it turns out, right, in terms of how people participate, right? It's also a little bit different in terms of, you know, having a 90-minute session, for example, is one thing when you got a bunch of people sitting in one place, right? But now what we're looking at is, hey, a lot of the feedback in prior times has been, give me the key information I want and give me a bunch of demos. Like, show me how things actually work and then I can go in deep, right? And so now what we have is we have the opportunity for people to click, point, you know, go where they want at the time that they want. It also brings a lot of responsibility back to us, because if someone's not pleased or, you know, happy with, you know, content, they can just click out. It's not the same as if you were like sitting in a seat, right? Sitting in a session.
So what hurts more if you're delivering a session to watch people physically walk out, which has got to be heartbreaking, or watching that number go from, you know, 1,000 to 650 to 5.25, but no, people virtually leaving your session? I guess they're both equally gutting.
Well, we know now, right, that, you know, since the advent of just having phones, right, that you can watch any event, right, that people are multitasking. Right. You know, I think there's data in there right now that shows it's, you know, 70% of people watching TV are actually looking at another screen of some sort at the same time.
Right. We need to consume a lot of information. Right.
So what I think it does is it basically says, listen, people want more concentrated, higher signal to noise ratio. Right. They want to basically get more information in less time. It basically increases the responsibility on people handling these shows, right, to make sure the content is vibrant, new, and exciting. And so I think we've got a great lineup coming up for VMworld. If you haven't registered, this is a great time to go take a look. And lots of new things coming as well, as you can see through the pace of innovation and acquisitions that the company's done.
Well, I plan on playing Bejeweled during your sessions, just so you know. We'll get that out there.
Send me your score.
So you hit on file services and vSAN a little earlier as we were talking. I want to swing back around to that. Why was bringing, you had iSCSI shares before, but why was bringing files important, and what have you learned since that's been out?
Yeah, great question. We did some survey data, right, to look at our customer use cases, and we found that 50% of our customers were running files already. Okay. But they were running at a single mount point on a node, where that node and mount point weren't protected by all of the value of vSAN underneath, right? For, you know, being able to scale out, being able to go and, you know, tolerate node failures, for example, and things. And so what customers came back and said, listen, could you give us a scale out scalable namespace that crosses node boundaries, mm-hmm. protected by underlying vSAN constructs, and managed the same way that I managed my traditional vSAN component. So we looked at that, and so then the question, which is interesting, and you'll appreciate this, was, well, what do we do first? Do we do NFS or do we do like SIFS, well, now SMB3, right?
Right.
And what's interesting is there was a VDI use case that would suggest SMB3, where you would basically consolidate user data into the same block-based VMDK images, right, that were containing all the OS images. That's one use case, and that was pretty interesting. And then the other use case was, well, on the cloud side, the preferred protocol is NFS. And so we took the cloud. We basically went to the, say, cloud-native applications, right, that expect NFS either 3.1 or 4. And so we prioritized that first. And so, you know, SMB3 to follow, VMworld might be a good time to go take a look, look for that. Oh, I don't know. And so as we were looking at this, we basically thought, listen, this is a great opportunity for us to not replace a storage services rich filer. Right? That's not, you know, and you know, having come from NetApp, for example, great company, mm-hmm. lots of great services. What you find is that the service, there's service rich SANs as well, right? They might have individual features that you might go and, you know, pick a SAN for, or service rich NAS devices that you would go and pick a NAS box. But basically now you've got the opportunity to consolidate files, remote offices, branch offices, where you don't want to have a separate filer. Maybe it's in the tactical battlefield, right? Where you don't want to basically have this. And now I've got a single device that gives enterprise file resiliency, right? And you basically now don't have to have two things. You can go and consolidate into one.
Have you been on the battlefield recently with a vSAN cluster?
Well, we have a 63-pound version that can be backpacked in with a single generator. So I haven't personally tried that myself, but I may
Is
do that.
Is it too heavy?
No, because I haven't gone on vacation. But when I do, I'll be porting. I'll be packing my.
I want to see your Instagram from that. I do want to ask you about unique use cases, and I know we've talked about this before, and I will not bring them up because I don't know which ones you're allowed to talk about and not. But, you know, Dell EMC recently launched a ruggedized solution for this. I mean, you've had other partners over the years that have had, you know, suitcase versions with multi-nodes, I mean, fully featured kind of things. What do you see? What do you see in terms of cool deployments? Whether it's, you know, supporting battlefield scenarios or, you know, oil rigs or other you know, hardened use cases. What do you? You've got a lot of years of vSAN out there now. You must have seen some cool stuff.
Oh, some really cool stuff. I mean, the ones that are probably the least sexy to talk about is like the database, data centric enterprise, you know, because there
we say boring. No one cares about that.
They're like, well, you know, it should work there. And you can see that. I mean, that is driving the deployment of VMware Cloud Foundation. So that's interesting and exciting. But the ones that are probably the more out of the norm would be the ones that are kind of at the edge.
Yeah.
And so what you're seeing at the edge and then remote office areas, you're starting to see where you'd have customers that are thinking about new use cases for distributed computing. And so thinking about like in a, and I think today I would say, you know, in the fat edge or the thick edge, like mm-hmm. that's kind of where the traditional, you know, traditional vSAN is going. But, you know, we're looking at applications right in the thin edge, right, where you've got sensors, for example, and being able to go and think about how getting to new form factors, like with the new VxRail D series, right? So a ruggedized component, right, gets you into dust harsh vibrations, rich environments. And so, you know, the applications that I'm watching are things like manufacturing environments, okay. Right? Areas where you don't have storage specialists. There's not the need to have like a three-tier architecture, right? Those environments, right, have tended to drive new economic value for customers. So I can't talk about all of them in detail, but they're pretty exciting there.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I know, while we're talking about nodes from Dell, they had an AMD node as part of that launch, and then they're also talking things about NVIDIA GPUs and other technologies. What else are you seeing on the hardware side? I mean, AMD is an interesting one. Are you seeing some adoption now that your partners are going to market with AMD server-based nodes?
Well, one thing to think about, right, is if you love hardware, and I know you and I do love hardware.
We do from time to time, yeah.
We do, right? I mean, if you love the new CPUs, right, the new silicon coming up, anything that's happening in persistent memory, it's all coming to servers first. Think about
Absolutely.
That, right? I mean, those servers, and it's a simple scale economics, question there, right? So, there's, by my calculations, nearly 40,000 servers sold a day. I think Dell makes a server every 15 seconds. So you start looking at the volume. So where do the new silicon technology and advances come? Well, they come to servers, right? And so, whether it's the latest Intel CPUs or AMD with the new EPYC CPUs, you've got different, competition works for our customers. And so, what you'll find with VMware is because of our long-standing software support and software ecosystem model, we're getting all of those new technologies on day zero. So day zero support, right? Including Optane, for example, right? Intel
sure.
Optane we brought up and now supported across different platforms. What's also interesting, Brian, is that, different hardware partners that we have, and, we partner with the industry at large, strong relationships with Dell, EMC, of course. But, different partners bring out different technologies at different time rates. And so what we find, right, is the software business model offers customers the choice and flexibility to go and choose one hardware platform based on this, maybe the AMD like chipset, as you mentioned, right? Or it could be based on, Optane availability. And we've certainly seen that where the choice of flexibility of hardware. And this is an interesting tension in the industry right now, right? Because if you deploy software by yourself, you get more flexibility on the hardware you can select. But
right.
You take on the responsibility of the integration work and of the day two operations. What you're watching Dell do with VxRail, which is extremely interesting and of high value for a set of customers that don't want to do that work anymore, right? And what they're interested in is basically saying, well, I don't want to go and basically configure and design it because I don't want to own that problem. And mm-hmm. instead, they're transferring the responsibility, right, to Dell EMC, for example, so that known day, call it known good state for day zero, out of the box, I know it's going to work. And it's on day two going to be configured with components that are also guaranteed to work. That's a known good state issue, right? And so
yeah.
That's a very important element, I think, for customers as they think about what part of IT do they want to focus on?
Well, yeah, I mean, for remote office and data center, that ease of consumption makes a ton of sense. I think when you talk about edge, which used to be robo, but now is edge, and you say thin edge and thick edge, but whatever. It's all the stuff that's outside of the data center.
Right.
That's really interesting. And you bring up a good point about how do you consume the right infrastructure in those environments? Because we've seen a range of anything from, gas stations that are playing videos now at the pumps and handling the POS mm-hmm. system for a little thing.
Right.
That spot needs a little infrastructure, and a little tiny HCI thing would work really well there. And it
yep.
ties back into the core and all the data protections there and streamings there and all those little things. So that's pretty cool. But we're also seeing edge analytics as a thing. So when we talk about GPUs, now how do I get an infrastructure that's flexible enough so that I can put a couple NVIDIA cards in there and do some analytics at the edge rather than moving all that data back to the core, which is a different data transport problem. And maybe I don't need all the data anyway. Maybe I just need the analysis. And you know, it's funny because we're starting to see a really neat influx in edge devices. I just talked about it last week, but Lenovo's got an amazing little set of Nano, Nano ThinkCenters that are technically in their server realm. They've got this SE350, which you talk about backpack vSAM. Three of these will literally fit in a backpack, and you've got onboard 10G, and you've got eight SSDs, or you can support an NVIDIA T4 in these things. They're unbelievable.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you talk about like, what do you do at the edge and how do you partner with somebody? And I guess it depends on the quality of the partner, but man, I think these little, you know, they're not quite, they're definitely not ready nodes, but the ability to layer the software on top of some of these really neat, you know, point use case form factors is super cool.
Yeah. And we're just, you know, the innovation that's happening, right? You know, one way to think about this just from an industry standpoint is, you know, when x86 came about, it basically split the software and hardware development. Right before that, right, in Unix systems, you remember, like, it was all together, right? And then, right, what you did is you untethered, you know, the OS from the underlying silicon, basically, right? And, you know, what that did is it just untethered the innovation so that those could basically move at different rates. And you're seeing the same thing here, right? Where we've split what storage was like as an integrated piece versus now there's the HCI software component, right? That's what we do at VMware, right? Now integrated with that full stack integration. And then the hardware innovation happens at like, at its own pace. And that really speeds things up. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, coming back to your GPU comment, though, for a minute, you may have seen that we launched a product called Bitfusion. Mm-hmm. And Bitfusion, right, is our way to go and help customers be able to share GPUs in a way that makes them more affordable, right, allows customers to basically share the physical assets more quickly, right? So it's effectively, I mean, virtualization applied back into the GPU level. A lot of enthusiastic excitement around that because we're now basically extending into more AI ML workloads. Some of the early work we've done there with companies like PyTorch and others. And so, you know, stay tuned in that space because we are seeing, you know, these systems are going to coexist and the value of virtualization is transcendent across both, you know, both of those environments.
Yeah, I think the Bitfusion concept is cool. The GPU, if you look at the single component costs of something in that server, the GPU is going to be maybe the most expensive, or at least as expensive as your CPU in that thing. And we've seen forever, even in HCI, where GPUs are in the systems, and now what? How do I take that card and keep it useful, doing something all the time? And I guess it was maybe a year or two, there was a trend that was a hot topic of taking your high-end VDI cluster that's got GPUs in it and running that during the day and then flipping it over and making that an analytics thing at night so that we can keep those GPUs running, keep them busy. The ability, though, to segment them off and assign, just like you would assign a CPU core or a slice of memory to a VM is pretty slick and should help increase the utilization on those assets, I would think.
And increase the utilization of those assets and just explode the uses in general, right? So, you know, for storage people, go back to Fusion IO for a minute, right? Remember Fusion IO, like a card, accelerator card, right?
We're still running Ion.
Of course. So, well, the idea of Ion was actually kind of interesting, right? Because that was the first attempt to make it shared, right? The issue before, right, was that you had a relatively expensive asset in a single server, not shareable and isolated performance that, you know, and similarly, GPU is actually pretty identical, right, from an analogy standpoint. And it was, you know, really when you got to shared flash that you just watched the benefits of flash, right, be driven across the industry. In fact, for vSAN today, right, it's over 80% of vSAN customers are all flash. Now, is that because every application requires the performance of flash? No, but you know why it's being used? It's because people don't have the time or simply can't plan. right? And so they don't know. You don't know what applications. And so if you put Flash in, right, then all of a sudden you don't have to worry about that anymore, right? Similar to how in your desktop today, right? You're running, I mean, do you have any idea how big your desktop, you may, but most people have no idea. You'd be the one person.
I was about ready to answer the question, but all right.
Do you know? You might, right?
Yeah, but you know, I think it's funny because as soon, and you know this better than I do, but talking to customers, as soon as they buy into the concept of HCI and put whatever problem application is onto HCI and it starts to work, then the next question is, what else can we put on there?
Yeah, exactly.
And they just get stacked. And it's funny because when we talk to the Flash guys, you know, they're trying to tune their drives for certain workloads and whatever. And that's fine in a real traditional sort of infrastructure way. But in there is no bigger IO blender than HCI infrastructure in general, because you could be serving tons of little blocks to a couple hundred VDI users while still running an analytics, while still doing some database or running, you know, your corporate apps.
Yeah, it's really interesting to think about how, yeah, so HCI is different from a storage system where, you know, classic storage selling went like this, right? You tell me your app, like sequential, mm-hmm. random, queued up, Stripe size, right? And I'll tell you which architecture you should buy.
Right.
Right. If someone goes down to the level of knowing like what the, you know, what the queue depth is on their app, they should be buying a storage system, right? This is for everything else, right? Where you basically need a simple operational model and you actually stop managing storage to the extent, you know, we don't license by terabyte. Right? That's not the way HCI is sold.
Sure.
And we don't manage by LUN, file, or object, right? We manage by VM or now increasingly container, right? So it's that shift, right, that's helping customers realize that I can manage from the app. It's not quite the app, but the VM or the container is pretty darn close, mm-hmm. from the app out. And that gives you an app responsive, right, developer responsive infrastructure. That's the type of model we're getting to, right, where now you come in and in these environments, now we know like how difficult it is to plan, right? Unforeseen things happen and you can go scale on demand. And you know, one of the early knocks on HCI as an architecture was, well, I don't know if it's that efficient when I add another node. You know, is it, mm-hmm. exactly the right amount of compute? And so the thing that's funny, right, about that is like, well, listen, you're buying a storage system and planning out for 5 years. Do you have, you really know what you're buying for 5 years? You think that's,
sure.
It's efficient for a mythical, fictional, you know, future. Whereas what you have here is you can start small, scale out on demand, and, mm-hmm. you've got one important difference from the way the public cloud and one important similarity. The similarity is that we're both running on standard servers, right? Right, scale out systems. The difference is that in the cloud, you've actually got one workload per architecture. And here we've got, as you mentioned, multiple mixed workloads.
Sure.
And that's what really drives the HCI value, particularly in the on-premises world, is the fact that I can go run all these applications and I just have one team to manage it all.
Well, that value proposition's really changed, I think, at least in terms of the outward market communication around HCI capabilities, because it wasn't long ago, a couple of years back, where it was still an IOPS battle and you know, we were neck deep in that in the Nutanix vSAN conversation is, you know,
oh, yeah.
Who's got a million IOPS, who's got a million and one. And that was part of the thing. And we're seeing the marketing from even the storage array guys who've always been IOPS and throughput and, you know, what can we do with this thing?
Right.
Even they're backing off that message because the outside of some really, I don't want to say fringe use cases, but really specific use cases, financials, high frequency trading, that sort of thing, the IOP will always matter to them.
Yeah, sure.
But for the rest of the world, the end customers we're talking to aren't running into a performance problem. It's just not there when they adopt these modern architectures, when they adopt all flash. And now the trick is, okay, so, you know, from an Intel perspective, specifically, you talked about Optane. How can we use some Optane and front like QLC drives or
exactly,
something
right.
real low cost? And so yep. we're looking at some systems now where these 15 terabyte QLC drives retail, go to Newegg or whatever, are like $3,000. And that sounds like a lot until you think about a 15 terabyte flash drive all the operational benefits you get over a 16 terabyte, 3.5 inch hard drive. Plus, if your system is smart, you're going to get a 3x dedupe on that. So now that drives a 45 terabyte drive. You know, it's smaller after you do redundancy and everything. But still, the point is, the performance is there when we're starting to use these faster memories. And like you said before, whatever's new is going into the servers. And it looked like for a while that maybe this sort of two-layer or two-tier infrastructure that vSAN uses would be possibly a hindrance at some point. But now that's the market sort of come back to you a little bit with this this hybrid flash concept, which is pretty cool.
Well, and I think, you know, for customers that want to disaggregate compute and storage, basically scale them independently, right? Look at vVols combined with VMware Cloud Foundation, mm-hmm. where VMware Cloud Foundation always has vSAN as a component, what we call the management domain, right? That's the bring up elements, right? Which is totally integrated, lifecycle managed, right? All that value. But then if you think about it, we've opened up VMware Cloud Foundation to SAN and NAS storage in what we call the workload domains. And as we work with industry partners, right, who are storage companies, we're able to go and now scale storage independently. If you've got specific services that you want, you can go and bring those into that portfolio. vVols is preferred, by the way, because then you've got a common operational model. But now you can start thinking about, listen, I could go scale storage and capacity independently. And so we've got this model right now that is really compelling for customers to say, I can go and extend the HCI model where I can get the integrated management, or I can extend that management across into the storage domain as well. We're a bridging element, right? So between the VI administrators and the storage teams, that now is basically helping infrastructure, right, respond more quickly. That's a very powerful message for customers that are trying to go and get some operational leverage in on certain times.
Well, that's pretty cool. I know we're up against the end of our time. I do want to ask you one really important question. I made a terrible investment about 2.5 years ago in one of the largest arguments with my wife over whether or not we needed this thing for the house. We have a ping pong table, and I know you're a bit of an aficionado. Ours is being covered in dust. What's your latest update on your table tennis game?
Well, you know, I have a ball machine.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Come on, really? Yeah, exactly.
You're sitting up there at night after a long, hard day, having a glass of Cabernet or something, hitting ping pong balls back and forth.
Ping pong balls. It's, you know, listen, you can, it's basically an awesome way to go and keep in shape at these days.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because look, I'm looking on my Apple Watch. Let's see. It's got strength training, tennis, hit. Yeah. I don't see ping pong on my workout presets on my Apple Watch.
Yeah, it's fun.
Maybe it's an open goal. All right. Well, Lee, thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate your time. Always fun to have these conversations.
Yeah, always a pleasure, Brian. And, you know, thanks so much for your attuned sensitivity to the market. It's always interesting just to walk through, right? And especially as customers are navigating through new applications, that can be a little scary for customers, right? So the idea that VMware is helping make it simple for new applications, really key and critical to how you invest responsibly going forward.
That might be a new hashtag, VMware. Don't be scared.
All right, then.
I want to thank Lee again for participating in the podcast, especially with that hot ping pong table talk. Mine is folded in half, tucked away in the corner of the kids' playroom, I think doomed for a lifetime of collecting dust. We'll see how that goes. Thanks again for tuning in. Hit us up on info@storagereview.com. Love to hear your thoughts and suggestions. The feedback is always great. Hit us on our Reddit @storagereview. We're on Instagram. We're everywhere. So tune in on all those channels. We appreciate your support. We'll be back next week with another pod. Thanks.